the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the ADVFN podcast, episode 285. And it's not Black Monday, but it's certainly getting there, isn't it? It's getting gloomier and gloomier. As I'm looking at the market right now, the FTSE 100 is down 3.1% to 6,054. And I think, was it last week? It was down 4%. This is off the back of more Chinese factory data, which is weak, of course. And I'm looking at my portfolio. I have 17 stocks. Let's look. 1, 2, 3 of them are risers. Telecom Plus is up by 1.2%, Proxama up 3.9%, and Atlas Developments up 28.6% to 1.125 pence. Of course, this is my £1 million penny stock punt experiment stock. This is the second stock I picked. The first one, Double African Potash, which coincidentally is also up today because they've announced another agreement. More of that in the news. AFPO, let's just check. It's up by 19.68% today. So cracking stocks there. But the majority of my stocks are down. It's not looking good. Anyway, on the podcast today, by the way, if you want to read about my £1 million penny stock pun experiment, go to sharepickers.com and you can find out more about it there. On the podcast today, I have the Duchess of the Chart, who will be charting REM, which is Rare Earth Metal, not the band. That's hard to chart a band. I don't know if it is. You could chart sales, I suppose. Anyway, Rare Earth Minerals, BHP Billiton, and Asia Met, all energy or resource picks, because, of course, they're hammered, pretty much. In fact, Rare Earth Minerals and BHP Billiton, Asia Met is not, but BHP Billiton is down about 6% a day. I also have Sasha Sethi, investor, stock commentator, and investor relations expert from Flowcoms. And I follow Sasha on Twitter, and he alerted me to, I think it was Asia Met a while back, and I quite like the company. And it's worth following on Twitter, because he does punch out a lot of good information. If you go to sharepickers.com, you can click the link where Sasha's name is, and it'll take you to his Twitter account. If you're not following him, it's worth following. Plus, I have the macro news and the broker forecasts. And joining me on the podcast, a regular Tuesday chick. I don't know why I said that, Nick. She's the Duchess of the Chart. It's Nicola Duke. You're right, Nick.
Yes, I'm very good, thanks.
I don't know why I said chick. I thought it rhymed or with some kind of alliteration there, but it wasn't. It turns out I'm just being sexist in some way. Anyway, Nick, you know, you are the best of charts that I know, and that's why you're on here. And some of the things you've called have been strangely true. And in fact, you did say last week, you said, listen, that sell-off at the start of the end of last week, we'll retest the lows there. And I didn't think it'd be this soon, because we've had a nasty day again. The Monday blues again. It's like 2.7% down as I'm looking at the FTSE. Do you see it going down any further? Have you looked at it at all?
I have. And I do. I think, you know, September isn't a great month. Yeah. And it kind of has the shape at the moment of a bear flag to me. So I think that, you know, yeah, we could have a few more days of this. Nice. Perhaps below 6,000 again, you know, 59.50, 58.50. We'll see what happens there. You know, we might retest the lows. I'd like to see a higher low, but I do think that we have a little bit lower to go before higher. Yes.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Sometimes it's quite good, I mean, to retest those lows, because then it'll prove a nice support level. I mean, the worrying thing is if it doesn't hold. That's the trouble.
Yes.
But do you think it will hold?
I do, actually. You know, but, you know, September, I think we talked about this last week, September is not a great month for stocks seasonally. I think it'll bounce from here, but I do think that potentially we have a risk of a new low, perhaps around 5,600 before a really good rally, and then we should rally till, you know, Santa Claus time.
Wow, hopefully, yes.
It's, yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it?
So basically, hold on to your seats, everyone. Buckle up. We're in for a rough ride.
The problem is, when we have a very sharp sell-off, like we had at the end of August, the reverberations can last a long time,
yeah,
and be quite volatile without actually going anywhere. You'll still just be within the range of that big sell-off, and I think that that's what we could see for a month or so until it sorts itself out. So, you know, a retest of the lows and they hold or make a higher low would be good, and then we, you know, then we could go higher, 64 25 I've got marked and 6,600, you know, I think are good upside targets from here.
Yeah.
So, but I can't rule out a risk of the low first.
No, and also...
It's like dropping a giant rock in a pond, you know, you get big waves.
Yeah, and also, that kind of violent down sell down that happened last week, I mean, even if you scroll to a two-year chart, that is a scary-looking drop. That unnerves the market, doesn't it? And people who jumped out there and have now jumped back in are all ready to jump back out again. They're a bit unnerved. They're not confident the market's going to stay up or go up further. So they're on the edge of selling again, aren't they? So, you know, fear. Basically, it's the fear that rules the market, and people will jump out when they get scared again. But, it always helps if you're a long-term investor just to sit in the market. If you're good companies, just hold on to them. If you're a day trader, obviously you've got to get in and get out, but as a long-term investor, different thing. Okay, let's have a look at some
there is one thing I would say about corrections. Usually they're very often two waves, and so a market that's trending will pull back and then carry on higher. We've really broken the trend. So and standard correction is two waves lower. I think we've got our two waves in the FTSE, but you know, let's be patient and make sure that the low we've got is the low, and we'll only know that till we've got a retest. So
okay, let's wait for the retest. So individual stock, let's start with a biggie that's at the center really of all this problem, and that's the China issue. Of course, China imports a huge amount of iron ore. I think they are the biggest market in the world for that, and one of the biggest suppliers to the Chinese market is BHP Billiton. And even though the results came out last week and they're cutting capital expenditure hugely, they still updated dividend to 8% pretty much, which is nuts. I mean, and they have a better dividend track record than Royal Dutch Shell. I mean, apparently BHP Billiton haven't skipped or cut their dividend for 100 years, and you think, how can they keep doing this? Because, you know, it's phenomenal. Because but anyway, look at the chart, is a nightmare. But because did you see, I mean, back, where was that? I look at the two-year chart, but back in August 14th, it was at a high there, just over 20 quid, pretty much. And it's gone all the way down. It stopped at 16 quid, then went down to, 14 quid, then bounced around there between 14 and 16, then all of a sudden gone all the way down and hit below 10 quid on last Monday, and it bounced back off that. And I did say a while back, 10 quid is the support level there, because if you go scroll back further, you can see it. But what do you think? Is that the level, or will it go lower?
10 quid is a huge Fibonacci confluence area as well. It makes a massive harmonic pattern on the monthly. So I really, it's actually, for me, the level is 950 to 990. That's the reversal zone. So, and we've made a monthly hammer off that level, which was great in August. I think that we're going to, just like the FTSE, I think we're going to go back and retest the lows. I'd like to see a higher low or that low at 950 hold, and then it's a great buy. It's headed lower today. Be patient. Looks good.
Yeah, because
Between 990 and 950, I would look for a reversal. Between 990 and 950, I would be looking for a reversal.
Yeah, because even back in 2006, then 2008, the financial crash there, it tested that a couple of times, didn't it? And bounced back off that, yeah, and grew higher. Okay.
So a lot of the miners, I was looking at the GDX, the gold miners last night. A lot of everything looks bottomy, but like it's not the ideal entry, so that's what I'd be looking at. Yeah.
Okay, let's go
990 to 950.
Cool. Okay, let's go with a penny stock that's very popular. It's Rare Earth Minerals, REM. Now, the reason I picked this is because last week they announced that they mine lithium, or they're going to try and them and Bacanora Minerals joint venture partners. They're looking to mine lithium, which I know is in batteries, and they announced a deal last week with Tesla, Tesla Motor Company, which of course is essentially they do electric cars. But what electric car is essentially, it's all about the battery, you know. It's because obviously the car's been invented.
Oh, boy, I do know. We have an electric car.
Do you?
My dad has one. Yeah. Wow. I have to say, in Britain, I don't know why anybody buys them, because you need, everywhere you go, you need a different card, because they're all different, you know. It's not like you need a different card, prepay card. You can't just turn up and buy it like petrol with cash money.
Can you?
You need prepay cards, and they're all different. Where everywhere you go, it's a different one. So he ends up going with a big fat wallet of like six or eight different companies that do
that's ridiculous. And it's standard.
It is ridiculous.
Well, I understand why you can't pay with cash. What's the harm in that? I mean, yeah, you know, these cards are cash.
You're supposed to just plug your card in, put your card in, plug your car in and go, but yeah, it's not so cool.
Well, yeah, so you see,
I think I'd like to see them really improve it.
Yeah. So there's lots of barriers to entry, but apparently they're selling a lot of cars, Tesla, and even in China they're selling cars. So we see on that day, you can see the big gap up there from what was it, from just below 1 pence, gapped up at 1.2 pence, but it come back, so it hit its head on that 1.2 pence resistance level, didn't it? And now is it going to break above that or not?
It is. You can kind of see a wedge from that April high, and we've broken out of it. We've broken above all the moving averages. We've gapped above the 100-day, the 200-day, and we've come back today and found support. So I actually really like this. I think it'll need a few more days to calm down, but I think it's a great buy above the 200-day, which is at 97. And I like this one a lot.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm looking at my chart here, and I've got a red line going across, and that's it represents yesterday's close. And yesterday's close was, 1.06 pence, and it opened exactly at that level, and it climbed up higher, which is quite a nice thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, so obviously if we buy it down here, then our first trouble and resistance is at 130, mm-hmm. which is where it's banged its head three times before. I would, have a go at buying it, and if we can clear the 130 level, we should go to 168.
Okay, and where is support here? If it comes back, where would you say support is? 1 pence, or what was that?
No, 85 is support.
Oh, is it? 0.85, yeah. Okay, cool.
It should not go back below that. I don't believe it'll go below 95.
Yeah.
Below 85, we're wrong.
Okay, but if I'm sitting and waiting for a bit of a sneaky buy here, a cheeky bargain, I mean, where would it come back to you? And you're saying basically 0.95, just below 1 pence.
Anyway, I think it'll come back to 99, 0.99 or 1 pence, just below 1. Yeah, just below maybe 9.96.
Marvellous. All right. So let's go with the last stock, which is ARSR. That's the ticker code, and it's Asian Met. I'm chatting to a guy called Sasha Sethi in a bit, who's a big fan of these, and he actually represents them in a PR aspect. But I like them because the company, the management, management stands for a lot, especially in small companies. Now, the management behind this company took their last company from $3 million to $5.6 billion, so they know what they're doing, and they've got copper reserves out there in the Far East. So it's not a lot of chart to work with. I mean, we only came on the register.
Yeah, and it started on the 27th of July, so there's not a lot to look at. What I will say is it's never gone below its initial opening price, which is at 1, obviously. Mm-hmm. Got retested at the following week. That I've noticed with a lot of stocks, the high and the opening price and the high of the first day's trading are usually very good support and resistance levels. So that means that 1.1 in this stock, if it came back this week, would be a really great place to pick some up with your stop just below 1. So you'd have nice tight,
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. You're right.
I see that in a lot of stocks. When they come back, they'll test that initial opening range high, and it's almost always support and defended. So
yeah, nice. Well, I bought some of these at about 1.2, I think. Yeah, because I'm just
thinking, well, 1.2 is the other support level, but you would need your support, your stop, if you use the stop below the opening range. If you don't use a stop and it pays a great dividend, then that's a different story.
It doesn't pay any dividend, but I'm looking for this company to be, for that management at this company, like they did the last company, hopefully develop it into a pan-Asian sort of resource asset. So so that's marvellous. So we've done ARS, REM and BLT. Thank you very much, Nicola.
Yeah, no, this one has potential 2.25 the next swing if it gets another go on it. So.
All right, 2.25 is nice. I like to hear that.
Has to get going, but
Sit and wait for that, because the volume is ticking up on this. There's a lot more people are getting interested in this stock, and there's not much shares outstanding, so it will move the needle a bit when people get interested. So marvelous.
If the podcast goes out, then it'll all be over.
It'll blow it through the roof. It'll take the roof off. Yeah, exactly. Marvelous, Nick. Well, listen, I'll put that on the I'm talking about here, but can you send me some charts on that? That'd be brilliant. That's brilliant stuff. And I'll put your @NickTrades on Twitter if you want to follow Nick, and she always worthwhile following up the link on my website, sharepickers.com. Nick, thanks very much. Speak soon.
Bye.
Okay, here's the macro news. renewed fears over growth in China have hit European markets, with the main indices falling sharply. Earlier figures for August showed factory activity in China contracting at its fastest pace in 3 years. The official manufacturing purchasing management index. So a while back, I think earlier this, was it last week? I think this time last week, we had the private survey. This is now the official one from the government. And even they say it's dropped to 49.7 from 50 in July. And of course, a figure below 50 indicates contraction. So it means it's slowing down. Even now, unemployment in the Eurozone fell to its lowest rate in July for more than 3 years, figures have shown. European Union Statistics Agency Eurostat said the jobless rate in the currency union fell to 10.9% in July from 11.1% the month before. Growth in the UK manufacturing sector slowed slightly in August, a survey suggested. The UK Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, fell to 51.5 in the month, down from 51.9 in July. Of course, we just said an in score below 50 implies contraction. This was well below the average index over the past 2.5 years, a compiler market said. After 2 years of continual job creation, August saw a reduction in headcount in the sector. And joining me on the podcast right now is Sasha Sethi, investor, stock commentator, and investor relations expert. And in fact, Sasha, you just want to start your own company called Flowcoms, is that right?
Indeed, Justin. Yes, thanks for having me on the show. It's a great honour. I listen to it all the time, of course. And, well, it's my first one, so hopefully I don't stammer too much, etc.
I stammered at the start. Your name, for someone with a half a lisp like I've got, Sasha Sethi, is quite hard to say, but it's out there now. It's fantastic. And also, let's just say, you are on Twitter, but you're not under that name, because I find your tweets quite handy. So, I mean, I will put it on my website, sharepickers.com, but what is your Twitter handle, Sasha?
I go by Right Man Shares, and you can find me at Right Man AIM, which is I think how you type it in. Yeah, so cool. I don't use the old Sasha Sethi one anymore. This is my personal investment account that I kind of use just to have a bit of fun and, you know, see what's going on, and kind of grew a lot from there recently, which is obviously how you found me. And I try to just tell people what I'm up to and say what I'm interested in, really. So that's the one I use, and that's got far more followers. I think I'll probably have to change the name there, but I'm up to about 2,000 followers, which is quite good.
All right. Well, listen, I'll put the link to your Twitter account on sharepickers.com. And like I said, Sasha is worth following on there because he always punches out lots of good information. And you know what? You recently, I look at penny stocks. I've got a penny stock punt experiment going on. And I look at volume and I look at certain categories. And recently, what came up on my radar was Asia Met. And I think I told you this. When you sent me an email, you said, Justin, I think you should have a look at this company because I know quite a lot about this company. In fact, tell us the background of how you liked them first, and then they approached you, didn't they?
Let me see. So I first met the company and Tony Manini, I think, last November, just as he was coming in with their deal. They used to be a company named Kalimantan, but I didn't really pay attention to his background, etc. Later on, they came to the market for a small fundraise. I think it was a very small discount to the share price at the time. I think it was about 1.2 pence. And I sat down with him and some other investors, and I loved the story, so I invested then, and since then I've been, you know, as Right Man, I've been telling people to look at it for a little while, but nobody listened to me. Nobody listened to me for months and months until perhaps last week, actually, where it traded 88 million shares, and all of a sudden it was all over, and people were asking me what's going on with this company, you know. So it looks like it's got some really good upward momentum, and now it's on the map, you know.
I'm looking today, we're sort of midday here pretty much, over 12 million shares traded. And like I said, I've got a filter that when certain penny stocks with a certain criteria, they have to have other criteria apart from volume, but come onto it. And this did, like you said, last week. First of all, give us a background as to what this stock's about. What do they do and anything you know about that? I mean, let's start off with what they do.
Okay, so this company was formerly a company named Kalimantan Gold, which has been around for a long time as a copper gold explorer in Indonesia. They're on a fairly small scale there, and I think the story had gone gone a little stale, especially in a downturn in a lot of the the commodities markets, especially on AIM. Recently, which what caught my attention was their acquisition of a much bigger asset called Botong, which is a bit of a gargantuan copper asset that a company, a private equity company named Tiger's Realm, had proved up and they were looking to take to production. Now, the deal was a little complex. You can call it an RTO, a reverse takeover, mm-hmm. where in exchange for Kalimantan shares, they brought in this much bigger asset. But, you know, it's certainly not a one-horse play, because one-horse race even, because they had two very interesting assets of their own. Another asset, which is their main asset, which has been progressed at the moment, called the KSK asset. And within that, that's a cluster of medium-sized copper projects. And they've also got some gold assets as well, called Jelai. Some pretty punchy numbers there, too. I recall seeing 90 grams per ton and 25 grams per ton there. So, I'm not going to go on too long about this, but what grabbed my attention was the fact that Tony Manini, the new CEO, who was also head of Tiger's Realm at the time, took over the leadership of Kalimantan. So, you know, obviously, I think management is always the first thing I look at with any company. You know,
definitely. Do you know what? That's what struck me. When you sent me some notes on this email, I mean, this is a guy that's taken, what was his former company? Was it Oxiana? Was it called? Was that what it was called?
Yes. Yeah, it's Oxiana Resources. So,
And do you know what was funny, though? You sent me an email, right? And you said he took this company from $3 million. And I misread the second bit. I thought he took it from $3 million to $5.6 million. I thought, well, that's not that impressive, you know? And I didn't realize it was billion. He took it from $3 million to billions.
Absolutely.
So that's phenomenal.
Huge numbers. I mean, so you've got to look, okay, well, you know, was this, you know, I looked at this even more because that got my attention. I thought, okay, well, you know, anyone can have a little bit of a fluke sometimes. Not a fluke, I'm sure it's very, very hard work involved there. But I my maths isn't best, so I can't work out the percentage rises there. But, you know, we're talking, you know, certainly
thousands
you know,
of percentages. Yeah,
once in a lifetime type. You know, you're looking for your, what do you call it? The 10-bagger type.
10-baggers, 100% each, that's all. And that's, that dwarfs that, doesn't it? Completely. It's like phenomenal.
Absolutely. So, I mean, yeah. I've never had anything like that. But, I mean, I think a lot of the investors had a lot of patience there with it. You know, it was over the course of some time he did that. But to do that was amazing. But he didn't just do it once. You know, he's done it again and again with a couple of other companies too. So, you know, when there's a track record like that of individuals that can, you know, they say what they're going to do and they do it and they bring a lot of value for shareholders. You know, these guys can navigate the capital markets and they also have, been prolific with the development of mines, taking small explorers and knowing what they're doing and actually, you know, turning them into producers. So a lot of AIM is littered with the, you know, kind of dead shells of companies that have failed in that regard because they had the wrong management, the wrong assets, or didn't have the experience or the confidence from the markets to take it forward, you know.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, well, I was looking at, another company, a couple of companies that have flown recently and their share price, and they all have something in common. And firstly, is good management is the first and foremost. One of the most important things, especially in a small company, like you say, it's not only good enough having an asset. You know, you have to navigate the capital markets. You have to know how to raise money and get attention. And so, you know, they've got the management, it looks like anyway. But what about their assets? Are their assets good?
Yeah, the assets are looking good. I'll be cautious here, you know, and I think that's the most appropriate way to go here. You know, just to be, I'm conservatively very excited because let's look at one of their assets. It's a £500 million copper asset that they're bringing in. There's,
let me just jump in, sorry, because you're saying £500 million, and now we're looking at a company, Asia, at the moment, are they a market cap at £2.6 million? Is that right?
Yeah, it's not £500 million as in weight of copper. That's what they've discovered there. But that asset was too big to take into production at this stage. It was going to be too expensive. But, you know, Tony Manini and the Tiger's Realm team and Owen Hegarty as well, a chap involved in this too, he was ex-head of Rio Tinto Asia, by the way. He's also chairman of Fortescue Metals, which valued about $5 billion, one of the biggest iron ore producers in the world. And, you know, lots of things to their CV. Let's not go into too much detail. I'm sure anyone interested can look at it. But these guys know Indonesia very well, and they know all the projects that are going on there. I'd say Southeast Asia. of not just Indonesia, but I think they got involved because the KSK asset, which the BKM part of that cluster is what they've been pushing forward now, is they thought it was going to be it's a deposit which they can take forward to production at a relatively low cost and fairly quickly.
Cool.
Going into, you know, more the mining speak, let's say, it's a copper asset, and it's fairly low grade, but it's the most interesting thing is it's very near surface. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the mine, even at low copper prices, the mine was considered economic at, say, you know, drill results of and a resource of 0.6%. But they've started to kind of knock their drilling grades out of the park recently, which we can kind of go on to in a moment, which actually sparked off a lot of the interest, especially when was it last Wednesday when they traded the 88 million shares on the day.
Yeah.
So being close to the surface means there's a very low strip ratio. It's called a strip ratio because it's basically the amount of earth you have to take away to get to the ore underneath.
Yeah, so I watched him, I think, on Proactive Investors video on there. And was the ratio 1-to-1 or something? Was that the case, you
one
say?
1-to-1, which is you know, probably as low as it can be. Some of that...
So basically, that's to explain that. So is it 1 ton of earth needs to be shifted to get 1 ton of copper? Is that right or not?
That's what I believe so, but not as an expert miner. I did read something similar when I was doing my research. You know, I tell you what, I've learned so much about...
That's what I love about looking into companies in detail. It's nice to do some research because you do learn a lot. I've been, you know, looking at copper grades and I had no idea because he said this copper grades, and obviously this is the guy who knows his grades, Tony Manini, saying that this is a world-class, you know, some of these grades are world-class. And I was looking at the average at the moment. In 2014, apparently, 0.6% is about average. And there's a way above that.
So they've got a resource of the Kalimantan. When the company was Kalimantan, you know, they've been exploring on this particular asset for some time. And when they put out their maiden resource of, which is a resource, is basically, you know, after you've done all your drill studies and a lot of modelling on the, you know, on the project, you send it off to various international consultants, and you know, all the kind of geology geeks get involved, and they state how much that, you know, what is actually there and with what level of confidence they think it's there. They had a maiden resource at 0.6 or 47 million tons at 0.6, with 12 million tons of that being around I think it was about 1.2%. The stock really took off there, and I think it went up about 800% in one day. I'm not saying that that'll do it again, but I think it was maybe mainly the way with the shareholder register was was kind of set up with the registry, that so much of the stock was held in tight hands that when any volumes came up, it moved it significantly. Obviously, it came down from there, on that kind of spike, but it's held a really good base for now. And what they've been doing is saying, right, well, Tony's been saying that he wants to add significantly to that resource, so he's had three drill rigs going constantly on these kind of assets and the clusters there, trying to prove out what else is there. And recently they added he was getting excited about, you know, more grades at 1.2, you know, intersections underneath the ground of, say, 54 meters of copper as well at those grades, which, you know, it's very, very exciting, especially for an open cast near surface mine. You know, the economics would tremendously improve from that. But then he knocked it out of the park with grades of 9% and 7% at decent intersections as well. So they've now discovered this high grade zone, which can, you know, tremendously improve the economics and be quite transformational for the story.
Yeah, so I'm in this company. I've got to say, because I quite like the story on them. I jumped in. So timeline wise, what are we looking at? When's the next significant sort of bit of action we're going to see, a bit of news we're going to see from this company? Do you know?
There was a release put out today, which was their half yearly results.
That's right.
So yeah. I mean, that's obviously very retrospective, and it's going through the achievements of what they put out. But I think it was very well well tailored to new investors coming in to telegraph the, you know, the timetable for news flow and what's going to be coming up. So I think the first thing, and it shouldn't be too far off at all now, is continued drilling on that high grade zone that they found to see if they're going to have some more punchy figures.
Yeah. Well,
so sorry.
Yeah, do you know, one of the other things I like about, when I'm filtering for companies, are the amount of shares in issue. And I can't quite find what the number is, but I know it's under a billion, which is quite good. And because, you know, what happens is, if you have too much stock, in my experience here looking at penny stocks, if they have too much stock, and this, you can look, find plenty of penny stocks under a penny which have like 8 billion shares in issue, and you think, well, you've got to buy a lot of shares to make the thing move. And I was looking at it, and I think it's under a billion shares in issue as well. So, you know,
we're looking at about half a million.
That's right, 500 million. Yeah,
here, it's about 500, and I should know this off by heart, but unfortunately, there's so many numbers involved. It's about 500, and if I say a couple more times, I'll find the page. That
yeah, no, but I know.
503 million.
Oh, there we are. So you know, like I said, there's not that. Sorry, that may sound to new investors, if you're listening now, thinking that's a lot of stock. It's not a lot of stock. You see some penny companies with billions of shares in issue, and it makes it a bit baggy. It doesn't mean, you know, shares can't rise with that many shares over a billion. But I like to see companies with less than a billion, and this is one of those companies. So you got the management, which is good. You've got the asset, which seems very good. And you've got, you know, a low amount of shares outstanding, which is quite good.
And what's so, even better, sorry to interrupt you, is that a lot of these shares are held very, very tightly. I mean, Tiger's Realm alone have 11% of this. And there's a couple of Asian very supportive funds that followed Tony for a while who hold it as well. A lot of it, because the company's been around for so long, and under the old Kalimantan, a lot of the stocks held in paper by there are a couple of foundations that got involved. They're very socially minded and they wanted to develop Indonesia, and they had a lot of followers around the world, and they got involved too. A lot of Tony's friends are in. I know that when they did the fundraising in London, it wasn't one of those typical kind of deeply discounted ones where people kind of flip out. You know, there were obviously a few that might have exited from them, but with the broker they did it in, some of his clients were made into millionaires when they came into Oxiana in 2000. So when Tony, you know, when Tony sold that, and you know, a few years later he comes back to London again, they all jumped straight in again for let's say Tony Manini round two, which is what this. It would be great if this turned out to be that way as well. I mean, I think, you know, we have to be conservative at the moment because the project's still developing and there's various stages to go through, but it's in a latter stage exploration space where there are, you know, there's resource upgrades coming. So we've signaled that that's going to be late September, October time, more drill results going on. There's something very interesting, and if I can be a bit mining and geeky here on something, if that's
go on.
Okay. Unless you have any questions about what I've been talking about, is
no. I mean, one other question I was going to say. I mean, is you know, they're funding, because obviously with small mining companies they need funding, and they do this by normally placing sort of. I mean, how are they? You know, how's their financial situation? Do they have funds there?
Yeah, there are funds there. As you can see from at the half year, they had $1.4 million left. Monthly, their cash burn, as you could say, is quite low because we own all the drill rigs ourselves. So Tony's been saying that this is enough to do him until, you know, early 2016, 2015. You know, so funded for the year. But interestingly, there's something that may mitigate this. And again, that's been put out today. The July gold asset, which had those very good gold figures, the companies decided that they would like to concentrate on copper. So they're looking at commercializing or divesting their interest in the July assets. And that may, you know, at the moment there is a well-known company who signed an exclusivity agreement to do their due diligence on this. And, you know, that could bring in could be a good kicker for the share price, because, you know, obviously you don't know the nature. It's too early to say the nature of the deal yet, but, you know, at best case, it might be a straight sale that could bring in a few million in funds for 2016. I mean, okay. if not, then later on, there's some very supportive shareholders in this, and I don't think it'd be a problem with funding, and certainly it would be on very good terms, but not yet anyway is probably the answer that we need to be looking for. There's a whole lot of stuff to come out well before that anyway.
Marvellous. So it seems like quite exciting a few months ahead, doesn't it, for Asian Met? And it's one to keep an eye on. Like I said, I hold a little bit of stock in them, and I think, do you hold stock in them?
I think I held stock long before. I mean, I bought stock in June in his fundraise, as I said, okay. when I met him, and then I was very supportive, and I thought, right, well, we need this is such a great story, and you know the management track record, and with them progressing all of this so quickly, I could just see that, you know, as it goes on, that I think I was getting in, you know, towards the bottom at, you know, 1.2, 1.3, and there would be lots to come. So, you know, I started to help Tony out a little, and then since then, you know, working with him going forward on a more permanent basis. So yeah, I hold stock. I won't be selling it. A lot of my buddies sold stock, and it's great that, you know, it's getting on the radars of a lot of people now too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? I'll be holding for a while, because I just, like you said, you know, with a management like that, I don't believe, like I said, they're not one-hit wonders. These guys, they've got something about them. They know what they're doing. And I think, you know, when a small company, especially when you've got management like that, it's very important to have that. And today they're down just about 2%, because the market's in a rout today. I mean, the FTSE is down 2.5% again.
Well, it's actually just I'll go into a bit of detail, perhaps more than I should, but there was a larger holder, and I think all of it is sticky, but a larger holder who I think was a little aggressive in the market. So I don't know what they, you know, there was an indication that they were supportive and going to sell, and okay. various offers were made to take their entire holding out, but unfortunately I think they saw the price rise and you know, got somebody to press the button. But I believe that they, if they're not out as we speak, then very, very soon we'll see that, which I think brought the share price down a little. But on the other side of that, there's been so much interest in the market to just take them out. So, you know, we should hopefully see a notification to say they've gone. And you know, it'll all be rolled from there. It's good getting them out now before we get all the news flow out. You know, you can see what I mean. There's a whole list of, I'm looking at, over the next few months, I've got 1, 2, 3. There's about 9 items to come out here. So, you know, they're all fairly, significant operational, items to progress the confidence in play. So, it should all look good.
Marvellous. Well, listen, it's lovely to have you on, Sash, and hopefully you can come on again if you got some other stock you want to talk about, or even an update on Asia Met. And,
Either or. I mean, I won't. Yeah, I think I'd be happy to, you know, just have a generic chat on a few, or, you know.
Yeah, because I notice you do, like, you know, I mean, a couple of stocks you talk about on Twitter, very interesting, I think. So we can get you back on. But as yet, it's ARS, the ticker for Asia Met. And sorry, I got the market cap. But 6 million, aren't they? About 6 million market cap. Cap,
should
I think
be about 6 million. Either side of that. Yeah.
But don't forget, I mean, people listening, please do your own research. This is not investment advice. Look up, do a lot of research on the company. Like I said, it's an interesting story, and I do find it. I do find researching companies very fascinating, especially when you've got guys like Tony Manini behind it. He's got an excellent track record. So do your own research, and obviously, if you find it interesting, then it's your own money. But invest it wisely. But Sash, thanks for coming on. I'll put your link to your Twitter account on my website, sharepickers.com. And hopefully we'll speak again soon. Thanks, Sash.
Thanks, Justin. Take care.
And here's the micro news. Here's the good news. African Potash today announced it's entered into a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, with an unnamed Malawian fertiliser company to supply it with over 50 metric tonnes of fertiliser. Of course, this deal, Chris cleverly came on the show saying he would be doing this over the year, hoping to supply 500,000 tonnes. So he's done one deal, or he's got one memorandum. This is the second one now. So, tenth of the way there, was it 100,000? So it's a fifth of the way there. If these two get pulled off, if he pulls these two off, then he's a fifth of the way there to say he can do what he's doing to do, which is quite impressive, really. Rare Earth Minerals said it had mobilized a second drilling rig in Mexico after signing a supply deal with lithium battery giant Tesla Motors. Shares in Argo Rangemaster surged after the company announced it had received an approach regarding a possible cash offer from Whirlpool.com. And Bwin Party Digital Entertainment has received a revised proposal from 888 Holdings, which it's evaluating along with the offer received from GVC Holdings, and said it intends to consult its shareholders in the coming days before making a decision. It'd be interesting to see who gets that, because 888, of course, are bigger than GVC, but GVC will not let go. They are like a little ferret, little terrier. Not a ferret, terrier. And talking about after them. Shares in Man Group, here's the bad news. Shares in Man Group slumped, and I sold these luckily. I think they went above £2. I bought them at about 70 pence. They went above £2 and they came back, and I sold them at 180, I think, which they continued to slump from there, which I was very lucky, really. In fact, I should have sold them above £2, really. Anyway, shares in Man Group slumped following a press report that the chairman of the hedge fund manager, China Unit, Li Yifei, that's his name, Li Yifei. Sounds like a Wi-Fi, doesn't it? No, it doesn't at all. Has been taken into custody by Chinese authorities to assist with police probe into market volatility. Apparently what they're doing in China is arresting people for spreading market rumours. That's a bit dodgy, isn't it? Rumours about what? Well, they say people are saying the market's going to go down. Well, that's not a rumour. That's just talking about the market. Everyone says that over here. No one gets arrested for it. The Chinese now, they've done all they can. They have to let the market do what it needs to do. And if that means crashing further, it does. Because after a while, it will find its support level. It'll find the level where people say, bargains are here. There's bargains to be had here. And people will start buying. You can't force the market. We've seen, even with the power that they have, money-wise, they can't stop the market from being volatile or sinking. So they may as well just pull back, sit back, let the market do what it has to do. In fact, what it does do, let it do it, naturally. There we go. I'm sure they're listening to this podcast. The Chinese authorities, they'll take that on board now and get on with it. The shares of N2 Group have dropped sharply after they announced the discontinuance of its solar division. And shares in Ariane Silver Corporation have sunk by over 40% after announcing that Oliver Rods and David Lang have each resigned from the board with immediate effect. It's time for the broker forecast. Here's the upgrades. Canaccord Genuity has upgraded Glencore to a speculative buy. Really, with a price target of £2.20. Because they have been hammered, haven't they? Glencore more than anything. Let's look at the chart here. Ticker code Glen. Let's type it in. I can't imagine it's a good day for Glen today. Glen, you're having a nightmare, mate. They're down by 8.29% today. Wow, look at that. £3 they were, literally, 4 months ago. They're now down to £1.36. Not good. I did hold those at one point. I bought them at IPO, I think. And it didn't do anything. I sold it at a loss. And that'll teach me. And it has. Numis has upgraded Aldermore Group to add price target of 324. Do you know what I just thought then? Did someone upgrade Glencore? I thought it was in the wrong section. No, they have been upgraded by Canaccord Genuity to a speculative buy. Yeah, very speculative. Anyway, Aldermore Group, add price target 324. JP Morgan Cazenove has upgraded St. Modwen Properties to overweight. Go lose some weight. With a price target of 5.30. And Deutsche Bank has upgraded the restaurant group to buy, price target 7.85. Downgrades: N plus one Singer has downgraded Innovation Group to hold, price target 40 pence. Panmure Gordon has also downgraded Innovation Group to hold, price target 40 pence. Oh, are you sharing each other's tips, guys? 40 pence, both of you, both saying hold. JP Morgan Cazenove has downgraded Helical Bar to neutral, price target £4.80. And JP Morgan Cazenove has downgraded Granger to neutral, price target £2.60. That's it for the podcast. Don't forget, if you know of a game changer or a possible 10-bagger, then go to sharepickers.com, click the link there, and it'll take you to a form that takes a couple of minutes to fill in, and I could feature it on the podcast tomorrow. And also, if you listen to the podcast and get any value whatsoever from this podcast, then anything at all, even if it smiles when you switch me off halfway through, please go to iTunes and give me a review. I've got 75 now, 5-star ratings and reviews there. And if you could, if I could get to 100, that would be a huge milestone in my life. It would change my life forever. I'll start wearing, you know, clothes of a king, and I'll walk around in odd shoes. Do you know what? I've obviously been talking too long. I don't know what I'm saying. But if you could go to iTunes, please do go there and give me that nice review, and I'll read it out on the podcast, and I will dedicate this podcast to you. All you need to do is tell you, you know, just click 5 stars, then write any old rubbish. If you feel like writing the truth or something nice, that's even better. But even if you tell me what you do when you listen to the podcast, that's cracking. And don't forget, please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation here in this podcast, as it's only just opinion. Please do your own research, as it's your own money. Thanks for listening. Speak tomorrow.
The ADBFN podcast with Justin Waite.